Well, we're back on the porch, and here with me again is my good friend Bev Gorman, my cheerleader again. And we're
you
talking
can't
today.
Get me off the porch.
We're sort of coming to the conclusion of this whole idea of learning to live in the presence of God. And we're talking about the biggest piece of what the presence of God is all about. And it's the idea of contemplation. Now, you may have heard of that word and you think, well, that means meditation. No. Contemplation means being in the presence of God. This is something that has gone on in very, very big ways all through the history of the church. And it actually, in a lot of ways, in the church in the West, it was a concept that was lost. And really, even in the monasteries, you know, it was later in the 20th century before this became an important piece of the monasteries and of Christianity. But contemplation is is the biggie, because it is going into the presence of God.
When you talk about that, does that mean, because I think a lot of people think if I'm contemplative that I'm not doing anything in terms of emptying myself so that I can get into this kind of Zen state?
Yeah. Well, I think in contemplation, it is becoming fully present and fully aware. In a sense, that's a hard question, Beth.
I know.
But in a sense, when you're in the presence of God, it isn't like, you know, you're doing something, okay? You're being, you're there, you're present mm-hmm. with God. And I think as you're moving towards it, what we're going to talk about in a couple minutes, there is an important process that you have to go through that will help you to move into that presence. So you just don't sit down and all of a sudden you're in the presence of God, because if you haven't developed a discipline of silence, your mind will go in every direction. And so there are some things we're going to talk about in a couple minutes. Now, I want to talk a little bit about the shack. And, you know, I had a really great time about 5 years ago where I spent the weekend with Paul Young. And the guy is brilliant. Mm. But what the shack really is a contemplative journey. And see, a contemplative journey is described by that. It is the real me encountering the real God. And when I was with Paul, he was telling me that when he was young, his parents were missionaries, and he went to a missionary school. And he basically had been continually raped by the missionary teachers of that school. And this happened in 3 or 4 different schools. And really, the only people that really gave him affection that he could relate to were the African-American women that took care of the kids in that school. And so, you know, Paul was on this journey of his whole life of being healed from what happened to him in that religious school. Now, obviously, the fact that it was a religious school, it, you know, brought tremendous woundedness to him, both mentally and spiritually, from what occurred. And so if you have read The Shack or if you saw the movie, you see Paul walking through a transformation. He calls the real me the great sadness. Mm. And the great sadness that needed healing was this sexual abuse that occurred to him very early and very young in his life, and then all the things that that did to him the rest of the life. His encounter with the real God, a lot of people are shocked that he has an African-American woman being the Father, that he has an Asian woman being, you know, the Holy Spirit. Of course, it makes perfect sense that a Jewish man is Jesus. But see, the reality in his life, you know, the only person that probably could give him a good picture of God would have been those African-American women that he brought up with. And so God, with his grace and mercy, gave him an image that he could begin breaking and encountering the real God. And so, and then the beautiful thing at the end of the movie, instead of God the Father becomes an Indian, mm-hmm. and a male Indian, and basically says to Paul, We think in what you're going to be encountering today, you need a man to be able to do that.
Yeah, I love that last scene because to me, that was the most beautiful and vivid picture of contemplation when he was going back in to get his daughter's body, basically. And God was, he actually took him back to the most painful, deeply dark place in his life. But he said, you're going to do this, but I'm going to be with you.
Yeah.
And it was such a beautiful picture of the tender heart of God allowing him to be fully healed through that. But he had to go back and he had to go enter into the depths of that darkness, the deepest darkness and the deepest suffering he had ever experienced.
Yeah.
It wasn't like God took his hand and led him in there. God was actually behind
him, there with him
and letting him, equipping him to be able to be healed.
Yeah, and see, and that's why it's very important you realize contemplation is not this thinking process. It is the presence of God being with you. The God who loves us unconditionally, the God that's forgiveness of all of our sins. Now listen to this definition of contemplation. This is a mind blower. It's going to take a little while to think about this, but contemplation is the development of one's relationship with God to the point of communing beyond words, thoughts, and feelings. A process of moving from activity to entering into the presence of God. It is a gift. It is love experienced without one's understanding. It involves purification and illumination. So purification in Paul's case was purifying the deep woundedness he had. Illumination was giving him a new picture of who God truly was.
And who he truly was.
And who he truly was, exactly. And so, you know, there is a great process that they have developed called centering prayer, which helps you to move. It's another discipline that can really help you to move into the presence of God.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Thomas Merton says this. He says, you take nothing with you when you go into the presence of God. And what he's saying is, take no gods, G, small g, O-D-S, take no idols with you when you enter into the presence of God. Now, what we don't realize is fear, shame, and anger we've elevated to basically to the realm of a god.
And well, those fear, and they're the strongholds and the attachments that you've allowed to become your idols.
Yeah, and so they basically become your god. And so, you know, when in Psalm 46 it says, be still and know that I am God, still the gods that are trying to control you. Get rid of those gods. Now, the illustration that helps you to see how centering prayer can help you get to the presence of God is they say, imagine that you're sitting in a river. And in a sense, you're into the flow of the river. Your soul has been quieted. And all of a sudden, a canoe comes down the river, and your mind and everything now, instead of being still, begins looking at that canoe, and you begin following that canoe down the river, and so you're diverted in that direction. Then another canoe comes down, and you begin focusing in on that canoe. The next thing you know, you've lost your whole focus of what you're all about. Now, here's the thing that's very significant, is those canoes that are going down the river are the things that are important to you at this point in your life. It may be your problems with your kids. It may be financial problems. It may be, you know, relationship problems. It could be a whole different host of things. But these canoes become focusing down, and all of a sudden you start thinking the problems that you have with your kid, and this canoe becomes a battleship. Now, here's the clue to the whole scene. Those different canoes that flow down the river really could be characterized by fear, shame, or anger.
Mm-hmm.
And so the canoe that comes down with your kid, it could be shame because you're so ashamed of the way that that child is acting, but you're really worried more about yourself than you're worried about that kid's action. Or that could be a fear that you have for that kid. Or you could be angry because he's not doing what you want him to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so what they say is you have to keep ignoring those canoes. So you see the canoe come down, you recognize it, you let go of it. Another one comes down, you recognize it, you let go of it. Another one comes down, you recognize it, you and let go of it.
So you just don't attach yourself to you don't that begin and following go with it. You don't yeah, follow exactly. it. You recognize it's there, and then you let it actually, go. And which is totally counterintuitive, because letting go and surrendering are the antithesis of what you feel like you're supposed to do, which is fight and start doing something with the will.
Yeah, try to beat it up, you know, sink it or something. But the more,
or I can't think this, and I gotta sit, you know, or whatever it is. But recognizing it, letting go and surrender are actually the pathway into just
getting released from it. See, fear begets fear. Anger begets anger. Shame begets anger. So shame begets shame. Mm-hmm. And so if you jump on the boat or you start watching the boat, that's when it starts to become a battleship, because fear just begins mounting. But it is, be still and know that I'm God. Still fear and know that God's bigger than that, in a sense, then releases you from the power that has you. So when Merton says, take nothing with you, you can't take fear into the presence of God, because fear basically breaks the presence. And so, you know, so it's very important. Now, what Thomas Keating says is, for most of us, you know, he suggests we take a 20-minute time and do this, we will have 359 times that we have to ignore that canoe and let go of it.
Yeah.
But he says, in doing that, you're letting go and you're letting God. Mm-hmm. So each time you're breaking into God. But just like any discipline, as you begin doing that and breaking it, you'll see yourself eventually being able to move into God. Now, every time you have a time of quiet, these things will come. And you have to keep fighting those off. So it is an idea of letting go, and, you know, recognizing it, letting it go, and then moving on. Mm-hmm. And it will eventually move you into the presence of God. So.
It's beautiful. Yeah, I'm sitting here thinking about, like, when you begin praying in that spirit, like, so the spirit of fear comes. So, like, take your child, and you start getting, you're really worried about your child, you know, something's going on in their life. And so as you're sitting there thinking about your child, immediately those things start popping up. And then you start praying in the spirit of fear.
Yeah.
So it's almost like I'm trying to control, I'm afraid, and I'm moving everything into now. I'm praying in a spirit of fear, as opposed to taking that child and releasing and literally letting fear get its claws out of you. Because if you're praying in a spirit of fear, it's dread.
Yeah.
There's no place for trust. There's no place for freedom. There's no place for all is well, and all matter of things shall be well.
And you can't enter into the peace of God, because that basically, and that's why Merton says not to do it. Now, there is one other little piece of this that's very helpful, and that is they tell you to develop a word that you can use that will remove you from those boats.
Mm.
Now, for me, that word is the word trust, because in many ways, the area that I'm most vulnerable is in the realm of money. So I've been working on, like, trying to keep $100 in my bank account every month.
That's a lot of trust.
There's plenty of room to trust there. And so as the boats are going down, then money will begin magnifying.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that helps me to turn off that voice is trust. When I say trust, it's like the boat sinks. When I say trust, the boat, you know, the boat just disappears. And so to have a word that can keep, you know, reminding you and drawing you back to. Now, the thing is, the word can be God, the word can be Jesus, the word can be trust, it can be faith. You have to find the word that fits your circumstances. Trust works for me, but that doesn't mean trust will work for you, and you shouldn't even try to do trust, because you heard me say it. At the right time, God will give you the right word to fight that battle. But the point is, you know, that word moves you, stills the boat, and you know that God is God. So I know that no matter how bad my financial circumstances are, God is greater than those financial circumstances, and I can trust Him. So.
To learn more about The Meadow, go to www.meadowfor.org. There you can sign up for our email list to learn about upcoming events in the Baltimore area, as well as upcoming retreats in Western Maryland. We've kicked off our summer podcast series, The Podcast on the Porch, where we talk about current and relative topics in regards to Christian spirituality. Subscribe to our Podbean page to hear more.